take the, you know, this is one of these things that you, you know, it's got a handle, and if you have problems with your engine, it's got two big clamps on it, you can jump your engine. Well, nowadays they make them with USB ports on it. They also have, of course, on the side, you can always plug in a cigarette plug to that. And I always do that. I take the HD, and I'll plug it directly into that. And they make them lightweight. Years ago, they were on the heavy side. And if you go to a hotel, just bring it in with you. You don't need to bring the charger that you normally plug into the wall. You don't need the wall wart. And I did it for a reason, because I had blown a fusible link one time on an older car by using the cigarette lighter. And I knew a couple of other people that did it. That, you know, they weren't even necessarily cams. They were hooking other stuff up to it. So rather than even think about that, I just have this thing. I can see it in the trunk, or I'll throw it in the back seat on the floor. Just run the wire from the HD and plug it right into the cigarette lighter connection. So I've done that. You know, Bob might not want to do that. He's new, so he probably don't want to blow another $50. But somewhere down the road, he might want to try it. Not for everybody. Back to you then.
Thank you, Paul. So let's see if Bob needs any fills for any of this information we've given him. Kilo Delta 2, November, Victor Bravo. K2RIW. You got it, Bob.
Yes, I'm trying to get all this information straight. Great on that. You guys are giving me a lot of good stuff here. The one from Paul, what was that battery called? That's question number one. I didn't quite get it. Somebody said Sears battery jumpers. I think I got that wrong. Booster. Clearly I need a clarifying of that. And I got the Ed Spong dual ram J-Pol DJ-B.2. Yeah, you just Google that stuff. And Dick, the thing you said about the homemade Yagi WH5BJD, or I guess, I don't know the phonetics yet, Whiskey Alpha 5, I guess that is, Victor Joe, whatever, B as in Bravo. And also, of course, I have my, it's on OM, I'm going to have my, my Elk log periodic, so I could probably use that for the same thing you were talking about using the Tomek Yagi for. Is that so? So that's another question. Okay, over to you, Dick.
Yeah, the so-called cheap Yagi, very inexpensive, very high-performance homebrew Yagi, is by Whiskey Alpha 5, VictorJulianBravo.com. You can look him up on QSN.com. WA5BJB. He's a guy who was a major member of the North Texas Microwave Society, a real good ham. But that website, WA5VictorJulianBravo.com, his second or third page after the advertisement for his green printed circuit UHF antennas will be an article on how to homebrew these Yagis out of coat hanger wire. Very inexpensive. The most expensive part of that Yagi is the connector that you use to connect the coax cable to the driven element, if you know what I mean. Lots of people have built those Yagis. You get more performance out of a Yagi than you do log periodic. The good news, let me drop it. The good news about a log periodic is that it's a very broadband antenna. But you could say it wastes its time having the ability to transmit on all of the frequencies in between the ham bands. And you're not going to do that. The Yagi puts all of its energy, if it's a 2-meter Yagi, all of its gain is on that frequency, or a 440 Yagi, out of coat hanger wire. It's all going to be on that frequency. So you get more bang for the dollar, more gain per number of elements. So if you need an antenna for 2 meters and 440, then build a Yagi for 2 meters and build a Yagi for 440. I wouldn't use a log periodic that covers that frequency readjust. But that's just me. Not everybody's going to agree. Now, when it comes to the battery eliminator, if your handy-talkie happens to be a Baofeng or a Wuxong, then the particular battery eliminator probably has to be made by that company. So your handy-talkie that you're going to be using, what brand name is that handy-talkie, Bob? KD2, NVB, K2LIW.
I have to get mad at this.
Hi, yes, yes, Dick, it's a V-Tech UV5, I'm sorry, UV5X3, yes, V-Tech UV5X3, but it's really just an enhanced version of a Baofeng UV5R. It's a tri-band version. I'm not worried about the 220 right now. I'm just getting a dual-band antenna. So if I buy a tri-band antenna, that'd be great too. So that's what it is. V-Tech UV5X3, based on a Baofeng UV5R.
So, Paul, I think you're telling us that the Baofeng handy-talkie, the Sears Roebuck battery eliminator, mates with the connector for that battery, is what I think you're saying, Paul. WS2N, K2LIW.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is the last one that I bought was, last two actually, that I bought are both from Sears. They're called Die Hard, made by Die Hard. Same company that Sears deals with if you go to put a battery in the car. So the Die Hard charging unit comes with a cigarette plug attached to it. So you can plug any device into it. It also comes with now a new one. Comes with a USB port. Put cell phones in or whatever you want. And then it's got two clamps on there. Have problems with your car, you want to jump your car. It's happened many times to me, and I've used it for other people that have gotten stuck. You know, you open the hood, red, black, hook it up to the battery, and then you turn this big switch on this battery jumping, in my case, Die Hard, and start the car. And if it's nothing too serious, the car will start, and you tell the driver, like I did one time, yes, where did I get that? I got it in Sears. It happened to be right in Sears parking lot at the time. Let me drop it.
I've got a further question here, Paul. The Baofeng radio has a battery that plugs into it. Nikea battery. It's a lithium-ion battery, which is black, about 2 inches long, inch and a half wide, half inch thick, and it's got three connectors on the back face of the battery. Those three connectors plug into the battery charger to charge that battery. What I'm talking about now is what I think Bob wants, is a device where he unplugs that battery, plugs in another device that goes to the cigarette lighter, that substitutes for the battery and acts like the battery, but it's running off the cigarette lighter forever. I don't think Sears makes that adapting object, but maybe I'm wrong. WS2N, K2LIW, go ahead, Paul.
From Toronto, Phil. Phil?
It sounds like Bob has, no matter what he has, with all kinds of plugs going to the radio, the end result, he's got a male cigarette plug. If he has that in his hand, this thing would work. Is that what he has there?
I don't think so. That's the thing that I'm asking him to get. He's got to buy the thing, maybe from Baofeng, which allows him to plug into the radio instead of the battery, and the other end of this thing has got a piece of wire that can plug into a cigarette lighter. That's a battery eliminator. The man from Toronto, please give us your full call and your information, sir. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Yes, India, whiskey. And Dick, I'm glad I got in on my other radio and got on the echo link. That's the important thing. People forget the pole phones have no direct DC plug. The only way into those radios is the battery. You've got it, right there. The other people may be thinking it's like a gate, so you just plug in 12 volts into it. You've hit the nail on the head. Driving around, it's going to get lots of repeaters in Ontario. Lots to be heard. That's going to end. But you've covered it.
Dick, how do you charge it? How do you charge a radio? Okay, yeah. Because of the amount of time it takes for the repeaters to pick up, we were not hearing the full call. But that name you just heard is Victor Echo 3 Juliet India Whiskey, Jim from the Toronto area. The Baofeng radio, it's lithium-ion battery that plugs into it. That whole radio with the battery, or the battery by itself, plugs into a charger. The charger itself has a wall wart. I think something in the vicinity of 12 volts goes into the thing that the radio plugs into, and after a few hours, it charges the battery. That's the way you charge the battery. A battery eliminator is a very different thing. It substitutes for the battery. So you unplug the battery, plug in the battery eliminator. It itself has some electronics inside, a cable coming out of it, and that cable could go to something like the cigarette lighter. So he needs the battery eliminator. Sears doesn't sell that, in my opinion. WS2N, K2RIW.
Okay, so that means you do have a plug that plugs into the wall. Take that plug and take this battery charging thing from Sears. And you know, you take your plug and you plug that into a little converter. You can handle up to 75 watts. So you take this plug it into that, and this little gadget has a male cigarette lighter on it, and you plug that into the battery. So coming out of the battery, you have this adapter. It's a male connection going in with a female regular 110 plug, and you plug your stuff into that. And I plug lights into it, I plug fans into it. You know, when you have power outage, you can do whatever you want with it. So you would need that. You just got to buy an adapter. When Radio Shack was open, they had the machine on.
I do not agree, Paul. The charger that you use for charging the battery, when you've got, let me pick a number, 6 hours to charge a battery, that's great. You cannot continuously run a handy talkie from the battery charger. It charges the battery at, let me pick a number, a 20 milliampere rate. When you're transmitting, you're drawing 150 milliamps out of that battery. You can't continuously run a handy talkie from a battery charger. You need a device made by Baofeng, I think, which is called a battery eliminator, a battery substitute device, electronics. If I understand correctly, Baofeng makes a battery eliminator where you can plug it and transmit continuously with the battery eliminator. Just charging the battery you've got there, that is not adequate, in my opinion. I wonder if of all the things that you've seen, the accessories you can buy for your Baofeng radio, your UV5R, there is something called a battery eliminator. Are you familiar with that, Bob? Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo, K2LIW.
Dick, you're forgetting duty cycle.
Even with the duty cycle, you cannot run continuously from a charger. You'll kill the battery. It doesn't have anywhere near enough current. And yes, you could run on the charger if you transmit for 1 minute and then sit quiet for 10 minutes, and then transmit for 1 minute and sit quiet for 10 minutes. Nobody holds a QSO that way. So, are you familiar with the thing called a battery eliminator, Bob? KD2 NVB, K2RIW?
You
Yes, yes, Dick. Actually, while you guys were talking, I just pulled up the website, and yes, there is a battery eliminator. I mean, yeah, I'll probably get that. And I also have, I have three batteries, actually. When I bought the radio, it came with a, what's the unit in, I think it's milliwatt, whatever, hours. Anyway, 1500 was the one that came with it. Valifang actually rated them at 1800. It's the same battery. They explained that they're actually 1500. They were mislabeled in the other ones. Anyway, and I've got two from eBay that were the bigger ones that some people call 2800, but according to VTech, they're actually only 2100. But they're a little bit thicker, but they're not the real big ones. But they're just a little thicker than the one that comes with it. So I got three batteries, so that'll help. And I will pick up one of those battery eliminators. Thanks for reminding me of that.
And those numbers that you see on your batteries, those are milliampere hours. If it was, for instance, 2800, that's really 2.8 amp hours, 2800 milliampere hours. You can draw, in theory, 2800 milliamps out of that battery for one solid hour, milliampere hours. Now, when it comes to repeaters in the Toronto area, while we've got Jim on frequency, he told us there's a lot of repeaters in the Toronto area. I wonder, is there a particular website that will make it very convenient for him to know the frequencies and the PL tones and the names and the locations of those repeaters in the Toronto area, Jim? Is he going to do better with that than with the rfinder.net website, rfinder.net, or is there something even better since you live in that area, Jim? Victor Echo 3, Juliet India Whiskey. Wait a minute, let me find his call letters again. Echo 3, Juliet India Whiskey, K2LIW. Go ahead, Jim. We're going to take Jim first and then SHO in that order. Go ahead there, Jim.
This is Victor Echo 3 Juliet India Whiskey. Around here, we use the Western New York Southern Ontario Repeater Council. Winnie Sork, West is initial for Western New York Southern Ontario Repeater Council.org. You get winnysork.org that lists all the repeaters. And it's about the best guide. And it's easy and it's by band. You may want to use Google because there's some places you may not recognize the name, like Ithaca. Might be on the edge of Buffalo, but that won't help you. But it covers Toronto quite well. And Toronto itself has five big repeaters on the tallest building downtown, plus a UHF and a VHF on the CN Tower. So you're good with a handy in the city of Toronto from the lake to, you know, 10 miles up. You know, Toronto's good, and all the highway runs along the edge of the lake called UEW is good. You've got I-90 on New York side is good. You need to get an outside antenna. It's just absolutely right. Don't try it without an outside antenna. That's it.
Thank you very much, Jim. Don, good information. The next person who's got some information for us is Mr. SHO, Sierra Hotel Oscar. Please give us the full call, your name. I know you've checked in before, but I can't find you on my list here. SHO, K2RHW. Go right ahead, sir.
And no worries, Dick. This is Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Hotel Oscar John. Formerly from Mount Laurel, New Jersey, now living in Los Alamos, New Mexico. I just wanted to drop back to the battery eliminator discussion real quick and try to inquire any comment from anybody else. But if you go to Amazon.com and just type in Baofeng battery eliminator, you will find many of them. For me, the first three hits are pretty good. I got 2x10Q, which are $8.99 a piece, and the third one is by Baofeng for $10. I have purchased and used the one from Baofeng, and it seems to work just fine. So that's really what I wanted to pass on. Not hard to find at all. I'm pretty sure it's an easy thing to obtain. K2RIW, KC0HL, good to talk again. Thanks for holding there.
Hey, thank you, John. And boy, you've really moved way out of town. Good thing we've got the echo link for you to get in there. Good information. I thank you. So let's see if Bob needs any further fills on all of the above. And I hope he's running his tape recorder. But even if not, all of this is being recorded. And in about 3 days or 4 days, you can play it back by going to amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor will have a recording of everything you're hearing tonight. Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo. K2RIW, go ahead, Bob.
Yes, thanks, Dick. Yeah, I need to get that, what was it? The about Ontario, that, I guess it was a website, the Western New York Southern Ontario repeater. What was that exact web address? I need to get that. I think I'm trying to get the acronym, WNYSO. I think there's more to it than that. So I need to get that again. And, yeah, the battery eliminator, I'll probably order from the same place that I got the radio, dtech.com. They're very good and they have very high ratings for customer service, and my experience mirrors that as well, even though it does cost a little more than what you were saying there. I was something else I was going to say, now I can't think of it. Oh, I should have been recording this. I'm new to Echolink, too. I'm also running Echolink on Linux on a partition on my MacBook Pro. I hope everything works. But I'll find all that. I'm running it through Wine. But anyway, mainly I need that website again for the Western New York Southern Ontario repeater.
Okay, well, had Jim say that to us kind of slowly. I didn't get it all either. It was a very nice website, but he's very familiar with it, but it's got a fairly long name. So, Victor Echo 3, Juliet India Whiskey, man giving us lots of information. Give us that Waysaki website again, Jim. Victor Echo 3, Juliet India Whiskey, K2RIW, the Tech Man.
J3JIW to the net. Okay, it's just the letters. I'm not going to convert it back to standard phonetics because you see phonetics and get the letters. Western, New York, Southern, Ontario, Repeater Council. Dot Oscar Romeo Golf. Copy.
Okay, if I took each one of those words and converted it into a letter, I get Whiskey November Yankee Sierra Oscar Romeo Charlie dot org. Is that approximately right, Jim? B3JIW, K2RIW.
When we people who know about it say go to Winsort, that you can actually like you could for NYCP, you couldn't say NIPIT, but for this you can get away with saying Winsort. You got it correct.
Okay, Whiskey November Yankee Sierra Oscar Romeo Charlie kilo.org. So let's see if Bob got that. If not, I'll repeat it to him again. Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo, K2IWZ, Bob.
Yes. W-Y-O-R-G.org. So, yes, I got that. Thanks.
Like you're slowly getting very equipped for your Ontario trip. How soon are you going to be going, Bob? By the time you get there, you're going to have all the equipment, all the maps, all the data, even the names of the people you're going to talk to. How soon are you going? Over to you, Bob, K2LAW.
Yes,
November Victor Bravo, K2IW, Bob, is your Ontario trip a week from now or a month from now?
I could use his email address too, Dick. I sent him a message via Echolink, but I don't know if he saw it. GPS.
Okay, sorry. I'm still learning how to use Echolink. I had a cursor in the wrong place and it wasn't going into TX mode. Yes, I got your address. I will send you my email address. Anyway, yes, now I don't remember. I'm leaving a week from now, basically. I'm leaving Thursday or Friday to visit my aunt and uncle in Connecticut. They live by University of Connecticut, UConn, stores in Mansfield, Connecticut. From there, we drive in my uncle's car through probably upstate New York into Canada, plus, I guess that's Ontario at that point, maybe it's Quebec, I'm not sure, and we're going to drive over the Great Lakes. It's more fun than driving under the Great Lakes. And we're going to end up in Fort Frances, Ontario, International Falls, Minnesota. We have an island in my family on Rainy Lake in Voyager National Park, if anyone knows where those places are. I wish I remember the trip there. We haven't done it in 14 years. We go through places like Thunder Bay. We go through places like, what's some of the other places called? Anyway, you get the idea. We're going over the Great Lakes to get to the middle part of New York, Minnesota, on the very northern border with Canada.
K2UPS, K2RJ, really fine, Bob. I heard everything you said. And, Rich, you said you mailed him an email on QRZ.com. His email address is not there. So how did you find his email address? K2UPS, K2LIW.
I did not find it, Dick. That's what I was asking for. I sent him a message via Echolink that should have come up on his computer screen. But I could not email him because I could not locate it via QRZ.
Uh-huh.
Hello. Rich, I just said it to you now. I just noticed that recently. Like I said, I'm totally new to this. Oh, there's that little window in the lower right corner, and I just sent you my email address now. Do you see it now?
Yes, I see it. Thank you. And I'll be sending you some information, if not later on tonight, tomorrow. KCPS.
Hey, thank you so much, Rich. KD2NBB.
Yeah, all of this is a beautiful example of what modern communication is like. Rich is in a truck. Barreling down Route 76 in Pennsylvania, and on his cell phone, by way of Echolink, he's passing emails back and forth, information, and so we've come a long way. I think these cell phones are going to catch on. We can have a lot of fun with your electronic enthusiasts, and ask him, how many cell phones are there in the world in operation right now? The answer is approximately 7 million cell phones in operation right now. Some of those people have more than one cell phone, but their cell phones, 700 billion, 7 billion cell phones. By the way, there's only something like 7.2 billion people in the world. There are more people in the world with a cell phone than the ones that have access to a working toilet. So from one point of view, a cell phone is more important than a toilet. That's an exaggeration, but that happens to be truthful. And there are a number of countries where the number of cell phones is considerably greater than the population. The United States is one of them. The United States has something like 105% cell phone coverage. Every man, woman, and child, so to speak. Obviously, some children. Let me drop a quick. Obviously, a good number of children don't have a cell phone. But some of their parents have two and three cell phones. That makes up for it. So if you count the population of the United States and the number of operational cell phones, we've got 105% coverage. There are countries with nearly 200% coverage. Twice the number of cell phones as the hold-on population, every man, woman, and child, in some of those countries. So I think they're going to catch on. So you can have a lot of fun asking your friends, how many cell phones are there? The next thing you ask them is, who invented the cell phone? You can Google that question. You get an answer. It is not the correct answer. The main development of the cell phone itself was by a ham radio operator. The man who had a lot to do with it, not all of it, but a lot to do with it, is Dr. Reed Fisher. And I'm all of a sudden having trouble thinking of his call list, but I'll think of it in a minute. While he was working at Bell Laboratories, and this was roughly 1968, he was describing that to me at the time. I was talking to him on a weekly basis on 432, and he was describing to me the work he was doing at that time. He had no idea what it was going to turn into. Okay, anybody have any further questions and comments on what you've heard so far before we're about to go over to the space report? Give me a call, let us right now, K2LIW in the tech man. Okay, one other thing you guys should know about, it's 2 weeks away, but, or is it less than 2 weeks away? On August 21, the shadow of the moon will first touch down at Newport, Oregon, at 17:15 Universal Time. Newport, Oregon is where it first touches down. And roughly a mile and a half, roughly an hour and a half later, it will exit McClelland, South Carolina. So Newport is the town in Oregon where it first starts. McClelland, South Carolina is where it ends. You draw a line between the two. That line is 2,491 miles long. And it's roughly an hour and a half it takes to traverse that time. That shadow is moving roughly 1,500 miles an hour. So if you were in an airplane moving 1,500 miles an hour to the east, you could see that total eclipse continuously. And there is an aircraft being flown by National Aeronautics and Space Administration that doesn't fly that fast, but flies fast enough that they're going to see the totality, not for 2 minutes, they're going to see it for 8.5 minutes, and they're going to photograph it all the way. So I wonder if you've read about that NASA aircraft that's going to be doing that, Paul. WS2F, the space report number 263, K2LIW, that, Paul.
Yeah, and I have the Eastman time, so I didn't write down the UTC time. I showed, 116 to 247 in South Carolina. But, I didn't read about the plane that NASA was using, but I did read that NASA is going to have a four-hour coverage of it, so they're going to talk about it, and they'll tell you about the plane, I'm sure. But that starts at noon Eastern
Eastern Standard Time on the NASA website. So, and of course, they're going to have it on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So that I saw, Dick, back to you.
Three, five, four. And unfortunately, where we're standing, where we are looking around, we're going to see a partial eclipse. And so, there's many a person who thinks, well, 73% versus 100%, it's just a 20% more. Well, you talk to a person who has really seen totality, where when you completely block out the sun because you're in just the right spot, that shadow of the umber of the moon will drift across the United States, and throughout most of that path, the shadow will be 71 miles north-south. The shadow is a kind of a circle. You could say it has a diameter of 71 miles. If you're not in the center of that 71-mile circle, you will not see totality for the 2 minutes and 40 seconds that you could be seeing it. If you're 35 miles off to one side, you'll just barely see your totality. It'll last only a few seconds, if you know what I mean. You'll see just the edge of the totality. So, you got to be in the right spot. And for the people who go to the right spot, let me drop it. Anybody who has seen totality and described it to you, it apparently is very different than what you would think. The sky becomes so dark that you can see the stars at high noon. You will see the corona, the fuzzy white stuff that's around the surface of the sun. You will see that out beyond the perimeter of the moon. You will see what looks like a sunrise, a sunset, in all 360 degrees at once. Off to the horizon, you'll see what looks like sunset, but where you are will be so dark that you will see the stars and planets at high noon. It gets that dark for that 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And so, it's apparently quite an event. The bugs start making sounds as if it's nighttime. The birds start bedding down. Most of the animal kingdom thinks that night has just occurred. They don't have a watch. And so, something like 25 million Americans are within one day's driving distance of that place along the strip across the Earth, across the United States. The last time that a solar eclipse where it swept across the whole damn United States was 105 years ago. And so it'll be another 100 years before another one of these will occur. So this is a pretty rare event. Let me drop this. So from one point of view, it's worth going to one of the places where it's viewable. Murphy's Law probably will get you. There's probably a 50-50 chance that no matter where you choose to go, you might be you might run into clouds, in which case it's going to be a problem. On top of that, when you do go there, if you decide to go there now, you're going to run into a real lodging problem. The people who know the right places to go had signed up for that lodging a year ago. In some cases, they paid a premium for that lodging. So if you go there, you're probably not going to find a place to stay. You may have to sleep in your car, if you know what I mean. WS2N, tell us what NASA is doing, you're probably, if I know you, you're going to watch it on the internet. You're going to watch you're going to watch the eclipse on the internet. WS2N with the space report. K2IW, you got a pull.
Surreal, Dick. Army eclipse.
GooseNet. Hi, Rich. Yeah, I'm going to watch it on the computer. I'm going to make sure I got my dark sunglasses on so I don't hurt my eyes looking at the computer. Rich wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rich, you also had a question last week, and when I listened to the recording, I suddenly realized we didn't get back to you. N2EO. Sound good. K2IW, good, Rich.
Okay, Dick. What I'm wondering is any records of what the ancients saw. They didn't know anything about an eclipse, and there's anything in the Bible about it. New Testament of old.
I'd have to talk to a biblical scholar on that one. I'm a little bit doubtful as to whether or not the eclipse of the sun is in the Bible. However, there are lots of websites that will tell you what it was like in the old days. People had all kinds of misinterpretations. They thought in some cases that it indicated that a plague was going to happen. But I'll pass it back to Paul. Paul's going to drag his feet just in case there is a biblical scholar who knows whether or not the Old Testament or the New Testament mentions a solar eclipse. I'm a little bit doubtful as to whether or not it does. WS2N with some delay, K2RIW.
Not hearing anybody. I think there was a battle somewhere that stopped because of an eclipse. That rings a bell. I like the lunar eclipses. You know, they seem to last a little longer. You can look at it with your eyes. You don't have to worry about protecting your eyes. They're pretty cool. I've seen naturally quite a few of them. That happens a lot more often than this one. Although I did see a partial eclipse. I was in Colorado. That was one, 1977. In that time frame. It's going to be interesting for the people on the International Space Station. They're going to get to see it three different times. Because in that time frame, they're going to pick it up in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end of the event there. So that's going to be pretty good. They're going to photograph it. They're going to use video equipment. They got all kinds of equipment. They're ready to go for the eclipse. And that's, two Mondays from now. Well, tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow Monday, there's a launch by Falcon 9. SpaceX is going to launch a spacecraft to the International Space Station called the Dragon. The mission CRS-12, that means it's the 12th mission that has been sent to the International Space Station by SpaceX. And I'll be leaving at 12:31 Eastern Standard Time. So you can see that go off, hopefully on a computer. It was supposed to go off today, but they delayed it a day. And it's an exact second, so if they miss the window, it'll be scrubbed until either tomorrow or probably, the day after that. So that's always fun to watch. On the computer, you go to the NASA site and you can watch that. They'll come on about 15 minutes or so before. And you could also go to the SpaceX website, which I tend to do. It's a little bit better. And they will also rerun it from their point of view. They'll have engineers on talking. You can get an idea of the satellite, what's going to be on the, in this case, the cargo spacecraft, what kind of equipment is going up there, science equipment. So they'll give you the whole payload. And they'll give you a lot more details. You'll also get a chance to see about 6.5 minutes after launch, this 15-story first stage booster with 9 Merlin D engines attached to it. You're flying back to Cape Canaveral. In this case, it's going to land back in Landing Zone 1. SpaceX has taken that launch complex over. It used to be called Launch Complex 13, and now they call it Landing Zone 1. And they have a big bullseye there. And last half a dozen flights that have landed back there have landed right on that bullseye. If it's a clear day, you can see this thing coming back. Beautiful pictures of this monstrous thing coming back from space. And they'll follow the pictures all the way up and all the way back down. cameras are that good. This thing gets to about 60 miles high. Does a boost back and flies all the way back to Cape Canaveral. And then it's usually a split screen, and then you'll see the second stage pushing the Dragon to the International Space Station. It'll dock with that in a couple of days. So looking forward to that. And then a couple weeks after that, they'll have another, there'll be another launch on the 24th from Vandenberg Air Force Base. And they'll be sending a Formosat satellite on a polar orbit. And they'll bring that one back. They'll bring that first stage back to a barge out in the Pacific Ocean. And that'll be followed by another interesting launch called the Minotaur 4. Minotaur 4 is the first time this is going to be launched from Cape Canaveral. They've launched it from, you know, from Alaska before. But Minotaur 4, it's an old peacekeeping missile that this company, Orbital ATK, has taken over, rebuilt these things for peaceful use. And first time it's going to launch in from Cape Canaveral, and it's going to launch from Launch Complex 36 that they have taken over. They're paying NASA to do that. All these companies are doing that now. So Orbital ATK is launching this particular rocket. On top of it is called the Censusat. Censusat is a satellite that will be going about 300 to 500 miles up. It's not exact. They're kind of keeping it a secret. So what it's going to do is it's going to look out, not down toward Earth, it's going to look out toward the geosynchronous satellite that goes around. Naturally, it's going to be going around the Earth every 90 minutes, but it's going to be pointing its cameras out. The geosynchronous satellites take 24 hours to go around, and they always seem to stay in one spot when you're on Earth looking up. So this thing will be looking out at those satellites with high-tech cameras, looking at those satellites. They're going to be able to see them. They're going to be able to see if there's any kind of problems, debris, things nearby. And again, it's a lot of top secret stuff on here, so I can't get too much information. You can't even get a decent picture of what the satellite looks like. But it's called Censusat. And that'll be launched on August 25th from Cape Canaveral. Let me drop it. Okay, another mission that they are planning, but it's a ways away. But it's on the drawing board. Hopefully it gets off the ground. They plan on sending these two CubeSats. It's a tethered mission. They're going to be attached to one another, but not around Earth. They plan on sending it to the moon. Now, this won't happen probably maybe 3-4 years from now. They're working on it now. And once it gets into orbit, about 50 miles, 70 miles above the ground, in orbit around the moon, two cube satellites are going to separate from one another on a tether, and they're going to stretch a tether all the way to 112 miles. It's going to unroll this tether 112 miles away from each other. That means the one on top is going to go up, 56 miles, and then the other one is going to drop the same, closer to the ground. And the goal is to get the lower one as close to the ground as possible. They're hoping for about 6 miles above the ground. To use a regular conventional satellite and try to keep it at 6 miles above the ground, they say it would be very hard because you would need a lot of fuel. At that low altitude, it's affected by a lot of mass concentrations of high gravity locations on the moon. So you would need a lot of thruster capability on a satellite to keep it that low. But with this system, they think they have it made. One goes up, one goes down. Of course, one down lower wants to go faster around the moon, and one up high wants to go slower around the moon. The faster one will be pulling the slower one along, and the slower one will be slowing down the faster one. So essentially what you wind up with is a vertical wire, you know, perpendicular to the moon. I'm dropping. And the ultimate goal is to study the surface of the moon. They have some locations that, you know, pictures of things that they would like to see very close up, and this will give them an answer on what things possibly are that they're looking at. But I thought that would be an interesting mission. It probably would be launched by an SLS, a space launch system, after that's developed, when they start sending that out to the moon. On an average of usually probably one a year. But this would be a secondary mission to something like that. So, and then another moon topic, let me drop this WS2S for the space portion of the TechNet. By the end of this year, there will be a launch to the moon, the landing vehicle, and the robotic mission. This vehicle is called the MX-1. It's going to land on the moon, take high definition pictures. It's going to take off, and it's going to go around 500 meters from its present location. It's going to land again, and it's going to take high definition pictures and beam them back to Earth. The company that wants to do this is called Moon Express. This one guy, he's been at this for many years, trying to develop this system. His name is Bob Bridges, and he's the CEO of Moon Express. And he's developed this rocket, takeoff vertical landing rocket for the MX-1. That he plans on doing this with. He can bring up to, I read, 66 kilograms, I think, or 66 pounds, I forget. It was 66 pounds. I remember converting it when I read it. 66 pounds worth of stuff to the lunar surface. So that'll be his first mission. He's already got a contract with a company called Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is another private company owned by Peter Beck. Peter Beck has developed this rocket called the Electron Rocket. It's got what he calls Rutherford engines, nine of them in the back of the on the first stage, and then one of them on the second stage. And he first tested this out in May, and it was almost successful. He was trying to get it to orbit, and it didn't quite make it. It had some telemetry problems, and it wasn't communicating properly with the ground, and it turned out to be a ground problem and not the rocket problem. So they decided to blow it up before it went any further. This thing was launched from New Zealand, the North Island of New Zealand. This guy, Peter Beck, from Rocket Lab, built his own launch complex on this island. So it was successful to get off the ground, and it worked out okay. It's going to launch, you know, small to medium sized payloads. So this guy has a contract with Moon Express to send the MX-1 to the moon at the end of this year. He's trying to, Richard from Moon Express is trying to get this thing off the ground before the end of the year, because he's got a deal with Google. Google is going to, they have $30 million in prize money if any private company could get a spacecraft to land on a moon successfully, take high definition pictures, send it back to Earth, take off again, go 500 meters, and then do the same thing, land and send more HD pictures back to Earth. So that's this guy's goal. Now he has plans after that. You know, this is called the Luna Scout that he sent. You know, he gave it a name, the Luna Scout. There's one after that, probably a couple of years after that, he launched the Lunar Outpost. Lunar Outpost is essentially two MX-1 engines, one on top of the other. He'll be able to land, and he'll be able to take off and get up from the moon itself and go back to its orbit if he wanted to. So they call that the Lunar Outpost. And then the one after that is going to be called Harvest Moon. Harvest Moon is going to have nine of these MX-1 engines, and he'll be able to land thousands of pounds on the moon. His goal is, he's one of these guys that look like to mine the moon and, you know, all of that, but he's got to get there first. There's other topics, Dick. I know you're long-winded here. This is WS2N. But, you know, we'll cover it as time goes on. Cassini is almost over. Cassini is the spacecraft has been on orbit around Saturn since 2004. And on the 21st of next month, September, so a little over a month from now, that's going to take a dive into the Saturn atmosphere and burn up perfectly. Back to you, Dick. This is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
And I think that spacecraft is now making a couple of dives into the atmosphere and making some very close measurements. So the next couple of orbits, as I remember, are going to be touching the atmosphere lightly before it takes a big dive. Is that true, Paul? Am I confusing the craft that's going around Saturn with the craft that's going around Jupiter? At least one of those planets, the orbiting spacecraft, is taking a deeper and deeper dive into the atmosphere before it takes its big plunge. US2N, K2RIW.
You're right. Yeah, that's Cassini. That's been in orbit 2004. And, it's starting to run out of fuel. And they don't want it to contaminate one of the moons. They don't want it to crash onto a moon accidentally. In the future, and then have future robotic missions go back and start looking for forms of life, and maybe they'll find them, you know, a microbe or something that transmits itself from Earth to, say, Enceladus or Titan or one of the moons of Saturn. So, yeah, you're right. And the one going around Jupiter, that's called Juno. And that's the one in the polar orbit around Juno. It's a very large spacecraft, very large solar wings, 120 feet long about, generating enough power to keep that thing going. And that's very successful, although originally it was planned for a 14-day orbit. It's in a 53 and a half day orbit because of some check valve problems with the propulsion system. They decided to leave it that way. It'll just be a longer mission. They plan for 33 orbits, and that's what they're eventually going to get. Instead of, you know, an 18-month mission, which is what they planned on, it's going to go on quite a few years. K2RIW, WS2N.
Let's see if we have anyone on frequency with further questions for Paul. Now's your chance. Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW. Okay. Do you have any other material that you think you could cover tonight, Paul? And we all have to think back of some of our great encounters with John Casey 2WGB to bring that up this coming Friday. WS2N, KQRIW.
Yeah, Yeah, I know. It's incredible. Because he was one of the ones that asked a lot of questions, including space questions. He had the answers and he had a lot of questions. There's something called the International